Okay, so I'm with Lucas Young, who is a native of New Zealand. He is currently living in London and a proud member of the Putty Tribe. So for those of you who've listened to the show a few times, you know, we come up with a topic, something that's of interest to multi-potentialites. In the past, we've talked about minimalism, we've talked about productivity, things like this. And, you know, we find a guest who can speak specifically to that and their experiences. But as I was browsing people through the Putty Tribe and thinking who else can we talk to, I came upon Lucas, and I discovered his biography, and he's really the embodiment of what it's like to live and, you know, kind of grow up and as an adult and so on, and pursue a career. And we'll see what his interpretation of career is, but basically to live a life of a multi-potentialite. He's got a fascinating story of the whole number of things that he's done, and it really kind of captures what the life of a multi-potentialite can be, you know, changing projects and trying new things, taking bold steps and risks, and just kind of making the most out of life and pursuing these interests and passions. So that's what we're going to chat with Lucas about and get some of his story and see how much we can be inspired from the things he's done. So Lucas Young, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. That's quite an introduction.
Well, it's really exciting. I was looking for somebody from New Zealand to talk to. You know, I'm in Canada, and Sandrine, of course, is too, and Sarah Clay, they're in Europe and so on. We generally seem to talk to people either in North America or in Europe. But, of course, there are some members of the Putty Tribe all around the world, and, you know, we'd love to reach out to people in, say, Australia and New Zealand, for instance, if not other places. And then it turns out you're in London, so actually it makes it a lot easier to schedule our call. But I gather, as you say, you mentioned earlier to me that you live most of your life still in New Zealand. I mean, how long have you been in London?
Probably about 6 months in London. Yeah, I was actually born here and grew up in New Zealand, and I lived there up until about 2 years ago. But I always had this British passport sort of looking at me out of the corner of my eye the whole time. Nice. And being a huge fan of British culture, I decided, well, look, it's time to leave New Zealand. I've done what I can there and explore Europe.
So you're planning to stay in London in Europe indefinitely?
At this stage, yes. I don't really plan that far ahead. Things happen to me, or I get excited about particular projects, and then I go where they take me. So at the moment, it's all about the film industry and television and acting and directing and so on, which was one of my initial passions when I was younger, and I'm finally able to sort of realize that. So in the time that I've been here, I've met amazing people and been involved in quite exciting projects. So for the foreseeable future, that's my focus.
Yeah, well, that kind of captures it in itself, that to not make those plans and just kind of have maybe some general ideas but see where your interests and your projects take you. So it's nice to have that kind of flexibility, of course, and the ability to adapt as you're going along. What's the transition to London been like? Have there been challenges? Did you have kind of contacts lined up already before you arrived?
Actually, no. And I sort of came in cold. I didn't know anyone here. And initially I was thinking, okay, well, there's that adult thing of adults find it hard to make friends. So I went to a bit of extra trouble to sort of get myself out there and go to events and so on. And I got connected to an acting school that's run here in London. And I started volunteering time, building their website, taking classes with them. And in a very short space of time, I made friends here. I'm now writing scripts for them, going to film premieres, sort of brushing shoulders with some big names, and it's looking like I can get some of my own writing and directing projects off the ground. So I think the challenge was just coming to a new city. I mean, my knowledge of the UK really comes from British comedy and growing up in New Zealand watching British television. So it's been quite an eye-opening experience wandering around London and seeing buildings that are hundreds of years old that are now McDonald's. You know, New Zealand's a very young country, so we don't have sort of buildings from 1670 that people eat burgers in now. So it's eye-opening, but it's been really exciting.
It is amazing when you travel, of course, to see the things with your own eyes. I find that's one of the greatest things with travel. And London, for me, was a great example, too, because I grew up in Canada, of course, but I was always interested in, you know, travel in the world, National Geographics, and those kinds of books and magazines. And I kind of, we had a few the Automobile Association guidebooks to Britain, I remember, from like the 70s or something. And I'd flip through them. I was like, you know, 8 years old. And all these pictures kind of sunk into my mind. So I guess, yeah, my first overseas trip was to Amsterdam and then London when I was 16, I think. And, you know, to see all these places, St. Paul's and Westminster Abbey and all these and all the rest with your own eyes, having, you know, looked at them for so long, it's just, it's an incredible feeling to see it firsthand. So I'm sure we could talk lots about travel, but let's get into your film background. So tell us a bit about what the things you've done, because it's a pretty impressive resume.
Well, when I was at high school, I wanted to get into film and television. My father said to me, oh, no, you'll never make money in that industry, and just discouraged me a little bit. And so I went to university and I studied astrophysics and quantum physics, and which sounds impressive, but really I just wanted a PhD so people would have to call me doctor, because I was very into Doctor Who at the time. So a lot of my life is a little bit silly like that. But I did get the opportunity to go to film school. I worked at Television New Zealand, and then I was able to work on Lord of the Rings with Peter Jackson and co. And that was eye-opening, just spending that time in New Zealand and down in Wellington for the last film. Wow. Being there as the film was put together and launched, and sort of seeing Peter Jackson in his shorts and T-shirt and bare feet, soaking wet, coming in from the rain to work on a scene, and talking to the visual effects people and saying, well, I'd like another mountain there, and can you add another 10,000 orcs? And then just walking out and people just shaking their heads and saying, how are we going to do this? But so that was exciting for me. Yeah. They did it, yeah. They were turning around about 1,000 effect shots in the last couple of weeks before that the final film went out, and it was incredible.
So
and I've directed a number of short films.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, you've directed own films too, yeah. What films have you done?
Well, I directed about four or five of my own short films, and then I was an assistant director on a film in Hollywood. I made friends with the director there, and I offered him the crew, a New Zealand crew, and we flew over in return for the opportunity to work on a horror film. So it was an independent feature called Claustrophobia. It starred Melanie Lynskey, who was a famous New Zealand actress at the time. Hmm. And that was a really exciting experience. And after that, there was a bit of a hiatus for me. I was working in web design and running a web design company, but film was always my passion. And then when I decided it was time to leave New Zealand and come to Europe, I decided that was going to be my focus.
And then even within the film, I guess, genre, like, are you interested in directing and editing, like the tech side and the creative, the writing side as well?
What happened was I'm a bit of a technical person, so I've done editing, I've done effects, I've done directing, all of the technical aspects of the business. The one thing that sort of baffled me was acting, because acting uses a whole different language, a lot of waffly phrases and stuff that you can't, you know, read a manual for. So it was always a challenge for me. And I knew that as a director, you really need to be able to understand how actors work. And I was fascinated in acting and becoming an actor anyway, just for the fun of it. And I'd been an extra. I mean, I'd done every job on the set really except be an actor. So becoming part of this acting school in London has given me, it's taught me amazing things. I mean, I've had advice from, last week I was talking to Billy Zane, who was the bad guy in Titanic, and he was giving me acting advice. So I'm learning about acting and learning how to direct actors at the same time. So that's the missing piece for me. And so the things that I've been writing are now influenced by understanding how actors work. And I've been able to write scenes for the acting school for their students to act out. And that's just sort of eye-opening and really humbling and exciting.
So do you have like a film project of your own in mind, or something to do, to aim for?
I do, actually. Yeah, well, I've had a number of them. And the problem is I'll come up with a film idea and then I'll see that a similar film comes out a few years later or a few months later. And I think, damn it, I'm thinking on the right tracks, but I'm not getting in there quickly enough. But I'm a big fan of people and of empathy and of caring about other people. And I also love sci-fi. So I've got a film that's sort of centered around those aspects. And it's a matter of how do you make a story interesting and gripping, dramatic, with a topic that's not as Marvel-oriented as empathy and the value of actually caring about other people. So that's the challenge, and that's a screenplay that I'm working on at the moment.
I guess it comes down to, you know, having a good story, right, and characters that people can resonate with.
That's right. Yeah, the characters have to go on a journey, and you have to identify with them, and they have challenges. And again, I was tackling scripts as being things that you bullet point and spreadsheet, and you've got to have arcs, and you've got to follow this particular philosophy, and so on. But what I've been discovering recently is that, like a lot of things in life, it's really about you and who you are. And if you throw yourself into something like a story or a project, and you believe in it, and all of that education that you've had in advance sort of filters its way through you, and mm-hmm. people will accept your story if it doesn't quite, you know, fit the mold, if your business doesn't quite fit the mold, if your idea is a little bit wacky, as long as it's something that's, I guess, consistent and true to your values and who you are.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, I often struggle with this, I guess, well, as a multi-potentialite, but it's like, how do you, or do you, should you find a common link, you know, between the various projects, like to turn around from something that's maybe entrepreneurial web design, and then you get into maybe music, and then, you know, some other completely different profession, right? And it's like, I mean, every time you have to start from scratch, it feels like, but you've built up a lifetime of skills and experience, and you want to find that common bond to link everything together. So, you know, it feels like it all kind of sums up into something. And I guess, well, obviously that something is yourself. And so it's kind of like your personal brand. Do you feel going forward, you're developing your own personal brand or identity?
That's right. That's right. And I was at a film premiere. It sounds funny to say that, but and it was funny because the British people in the room were very reserved about approaching the sort of stars and director and so on after the film, but not me. I just jumped straight in there and stuff. And my attitude has always been, you only live once. What's the worst that could happen? I mean, when I was a child, I was a huge fan of Dire Straits and Mark Knopfler, and I wanted to meet him, but obviously he was the biggest artist in the world at the time. So when Dire Straits came to New Zealand, I called all of the hotels in Auckland, which is where they were playing, and I said, are Dire Straits staying there? And all of the hotels said no, except one, who said, I'm sorry, sir, we can't release that information. So I thought, bingo. So I went to that hotel with my guitar, and I sat in the foyer for 7 hours, and then Mark Knopfler walked out alone by himself, and I got to talk to him, and he signed my guitar, and we chatted. And that sort of made me think that if you want something in life, you don't have to be a dick about it, but you can just go out there and get it. The only thing stopping you is your own fear or your own sort of lack of self-confidence. And if you just sort of put that to one side and just charge ahead and go for it, you seem to be able to accomplish whatever you want.
Yeah, so you're not someone who's lacked in confidence then.
Well, no, not in that way. Like I'm very shy, and I'm very humble, and I don't, and I'm very aware of people. Like I'm careful about not intimidating people or over talking people, and trying to listen to them, understand them, and learn from them. Like I learn from a lot of my friends are 18 to 25 because I find their age group fascinatingly passionate. They haven't been crushed by life. They're full of dreams and visions. Mm-hmm. And then I can come along and not only be a friend to these people, but I'm a mentor, and I've got resources that they don't have. So they can inspire me and teach me, and then I can inspire them and teach them. Mm. So when I decided to leave New Zealand, because my mum was French, I said, well, I want to go to France first, but I don't want to be a tourist. I want to live there and experience it. Mm-hmm. And okay, this is a bit of a story, but in 2006, I accidentally created the world's largest cannabis media website. I was with some friends in New Zealand, and we thought, as a joke, wouldn't it be funny to make a website for cannabis-based recipes? Because New Zealand is a country that's full of stoners, and like a lot of countries, you know, it's a common thing, and people who are stoned tend to eat a lot of really crazy foods like ice cream and cereal. So we made this website, myself and my business partner, called the Stoner's Cookbook, which was just a recipe website, and people could upload their crazy recipes, and we forgot about it. And then 3 years later, I checked on the server, and our site was still there, and it was the number one cannabis website in the world at the time.
Wow.
And so we monetized that. We rebranded it to Herb, or Herb, as you say in America, Canada and America, because the word stoner has a bad stigma attached to it. Yeah. And it's got about 10 million followers on Facebook now. And that was our business for a while. And I sold my shares in that recently, and that's what's given me the freedom to sort of travel around and do other things. But what happened was a couple of French beatboxers, and that's the, you know, the vocal beatboxing, which is something I'm trying to learn, and it's really difficult. Hmm. But they emailed me and said, hey, can you put our video on your Facebook page? Which I did. And then I thought, hey, these guys are in France. maybe I'll go there. Yeah, I won't go to Paris. I'll go to this little town of Annecy in the south of France, and I'll help these guys with their social media and their website, and they can teach me about what it's like to be young and growing up in France. And so I spent a year and a half traveling around France, being friends with these guys and
Okay.
helping them out. And you know, and I think I think if there was a theme for my life, it would be coming of age. Because in my teens at school, I didn't really have that many friends. I didn't know what I was doing. I was different to everyone else. Now, even though I'm a lot older, I'm reliving that sort of growing up and making friends phase. And so yeah, so I gather information, and I get inspired by people, and I mentor people. And having sold my shares in this company, it's given me a bit of time and freedom to not only be able to help people, but also explore the avenues that I'm interested in.
So, I mean, the Herb Company, the Stoner Cookbook, that was that like your, I guess, your job, your business, or your source of income there for a while?
It was for a while. It was one of our web projects. And again, you know, you start so many businesses as an entrepreneur that fail. And this one we started as a joke, and then it just suddenly exploded. So we published two cookbooks. Like I said, we've got about 10 million followers on Facebook, and it was a full-time business for a while. And then I just started to get itchy feet. You know, I was in France. I wanted to get into film. I'm into cryptocurrency, so I've got a business partner who's about to launch a coin. I just finished an online course in artificial intelligence and neural networks and deep learning, so I'm qualified to write AI. And I thought, well, it's time to get out of Herb. So I sold my shares, and that's just given me the time to explore all of these other options. You know, I wrote the first draft of a novel. I'm working on a screenplay. It's like my to-do list gets long. Every time I take something off my to-do list, I add three things on. So it's chaos, but it's fun chaos, you know?
When you take something off your to-do list, like say the website there, the cookbook, and you know you've done it, and you it was quite successful, and then do you feel like you can ever always walk away from it? Do you ever feel that you might want to get back to it, or do you really feel like I've accomplished that and I can let it go, I can move on?
That's an interesting question, because I'm getting to the point now. See, I'm great at some things. Like when I was young, the New Zealand government sent some people down to test my IQ, and it was 156, and that was official. But the thing is, I didn't tell anyone about that because I was more interested in having friends than bragging about being smarter than everybody.
Sure.
But what that's meant is that I get very, very interested in a lot of things and get into them very deeply. But I'm terrible at other things. I've got like my common sense is terrible. I'm no good with money. So what's going to happen at some point is this money from my website payout is going to dry up. And at that point, I'm going to have to earn money again. And it's that terrible choice of, yes, I could get back into tech and IT. I've got recruiting people calling me up all the time saying, you know, blockchain, is it? Blockchain's what's happening at the moment. You know, will you come and work for a blockchain company? And yes, I could do that. But I'm so loving writing, creating, learning about film, meeting film people, and working on film projects. That's what I want to do going forward. But that's not going to make nearly as much money or any money, really. So that's my challenge at the moment.
Yeah, I mean it's great to have that kind of adaptability for sure.
You know, your life is something that you know it's a limited period of time, and you want to do as much as you can in that period of time. So if that means doing 50 different things at once and throwing yourself all over the place, why the hell not, you know?
Have you thought about other mediums like well, podcasting or I don't know, even blogging or maybe video, YouTube, things like that?
I've done a little bit of all. I mean, I do have some videos. I was vlogging when I was traveling around France for a while, but it was a huge amount of work. And I think if you can tell a good dramatic story and get a team of people behind you, because filmmaking is a very collaborative medium, and if you could find some people who shared your vision and were able to bring their talents to it, you could tell some really powerful stories and get them across to people. And gaming and filmmaking seem to be the major sort of influences at the moment. So,
Yeah.
I mean, I play a lot of games, and tinkering around with writing games and stuff and apps and things. So, I mean, it's just where those technologies will sort of coalesce. But for me, I think film is what I love the most. So that's where I want all of what I've learned through my life to sort of come together.
Sure. I'm curious what rotoscoping means, because it says here you rotoscope the eyes of the King of the Dead in the Lord of the Rings, Return of the King.
Well, during the day, my job at Weta was managing all of the footage that they would film and scan, and I was an IT guy. But I was like, what can I do to help you guys in the evening? So I would go across to another department, and rotoscoping is basically drawing around the edges of objects in a film frame, okay. A bit like blue screening. But sometimes, you know, when you've got 1,000 guys on horses galloping across the field, you can't put a blue screen behind them. So you would have to draw around the edges of the spears they were carrying, frame by frame. Wow. And for the leader of the dead had very milky cataract eyes. And so I would have to draw around the edge of his eyes frame by frame so that an animator later on or an editor later on could actually just lighten the eyes and nothing else in that frame. You know what I mean?
Okay. Well, that must take forever.
It does. I mean, the software helps. Okay. In a particular shot, there might be, say, 50 frames. It's like couple of seconds of screen time, but the software would remember what you'd like, you know, the dotted lines you get in, say, Photoshop or any app where you select something that would carry from one frame to the next. So you might only have to adjust it a little bit frame by frame to sort of follow the eyes as they're moving. It's exacting work, and it was completely different to what I was doing during the day. But again, I met cool people and I loved doing it, and it was nice to contribute to such an awesome film.
Oh yeah, it must have been an incredible experience. That's what like lots of people, what took me to New Zealand was to, after I saw the movies, I was like, that's it, I have to see New Zealand, I have to go. So I was there in late 2011 and early 2012. My wife and I lived in Te Anau in the South Island.
Ah, beautiful.
For
yeah.
a few weeks. And then we bought a little car in Auckland and traveled down the North Island. We had some friends in the West Coast and the South Island. And yeah, in the end, we went right down to the southern point. At Bluff, is it? The very southern point. And then right back up to the north, the very north tip at Cape Ranga, isn't it?
Yeah. That's it, yeah.
Yeah, so...
It's not a huge country. It's only the size, I think, England, same yeah. size. So.
Yeah, so, I mean, you can, you know, especially for a Canadian, it's like if you're used to driving and you can cover the whole country, so... Yeah, so
it's a beautiful country.
It really was. The amazing, you know, you have everything, of course, mountains and glaciers to tropical beaches, beautiful forests, and wonderful people. We made some really good friends there.
Yeah, and it's true. And everyone I meet in Europe is saying, oh, I'd love to go to New Zealand. And they're saying, why did you leave? And I'm like, yeah, but if you've spent your whole life around beautiful beaches and mountains and forests and things, that's great. But, you know, there's other things to experience, you know, and since I've been in London, it's like city living and meeting people that are really big in the film and television industry and being able to work on projects. So,
sure.
So that's as exciting for me as the fact I could, you know, walk to the beach as a child and, you know, go to the mountain within 20 minutes.
And the other thing, you know, with New Zealand, of course, is it's just so far away. And I realize when you're there, if that's your life is to be there, you kind of embrace it. And you feel a little more remote and separate from the rest of the world. And it's a nice feeling. It's kind of a comforting, I found a comforting kind of feeling that, you know, there's all this crap that's going on in America or Europe or wherever else. And it's not like you're unaware of it, but you just feel a little more removed from it. And on one hand, that's a great thing. On the other hand, of course, for me, I mean, coming from Canada, I forget the exact, well, we were talking about it because I wasn't sure if you were in New Zealand this time and the time difference would have been 16 hours. And I was like, how are we going to line up this interview, right? But that's just it, you know, and you feel so far away if you have friends, of course, family on the other side of the world. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, but yeah, it's a different feeling being down there.
Yeah, and the thing that blows my mind about Europe is that I can get on a train from here in London and be in Paris in 3 hours. And when I first came to London, people would say to me, oh, we're going to Paris for lunch on the weekend. And I'm like, you're going to another country for lunch? You're crazy. You know, and I can get anywhere in Europe in about 3 hours. I can go to Brussels in 2 hours. And when I was in France, I was popping across to Switzerland, and I made a documentary about a juggler, a contact juggler who lived in the Swiss Alps. And contact juggling is where they roll that glass ball around their body and over their hands the way that David Bowie did in Labyrinth.
Yeah.
And I saw a guy on YouTube who was really good at it, and I met up with him and I took my camera up into the Swiss Alps and I made a little documentary about him, which I put on my YouTube channel. But that was just so easy to get there. I mean, once you understand the train system in Europe, it's so easy to get around. If you're in New Zealand, and you might do Australia for a weekend and it's sort of like a 3-hour flight, but you would never – you know, pop to LA for lunch. It's a 13-hour trip. So that's what I love about Europe, you know.
Yeah, it's the same perspective for Canadians, of course, you know, and Americans, like, you know, the distances are so huge here, and you go to Europe and everything's so close. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Right, so what's your approach and strategy to multitasking?
I wish I could have some sage advice on that one, but for me, I as long as there's a set list of deliverables in your tasks, I'm one of those terrible people that's last in, first out when it comes to tasks. My business partner used to hate that because I'd be working on a project. A new project would come in, so I would jump to that one and finish it before I could go back to the old one, you know. So I tend to work through the fastest, quickest projects first, so that my to-do list is as short as possible. I have a zero inbox philosophy. Like, if an email comes in, I would deal with it immediately and get it out there, because I hate having things weighing on my mind at the end of the day that I have to do.
Right.
So I think in terms of multitasking, I think as long as you're looking after yourself and you're not burning out, you there's a freshness to being able to jump from one idea, one business, one project to another one in a completely different genre. It keeps the brain fresh, and it means that while you're working on one thing, some other part of your brain, like if you're doing something creative, then the technical part of your brain will be ticking over behind the scenes and will give you an answer to something that you need in the technical project, so you can jump back to that. Mm-hmm. But whether that works for everyone or not, I don't know.
Before we go, I want to ask you too about, you said, I don't know if this is a literal thing or what, you said you once fell off a cliff, and that resulted in you winning a car on New Zealand's version of Wheel of Fortune.
Yes, it was a rainy day, and all of New Zealand was excited about the yachting regatta in Auckland. And I went there with my friends, and it was a cliff basically, but it was steep and muddy. And they had that knack of being able to run down a steep, slippery slope and not fall. But I ran and slipped, and I fell about 6 feet, I think, and landed sitting on the beach.
Okay.
And I'd winded myself, so I couldn't get up. And I was surrounded by thousands of people because it was a big day. And all of my friends instantly knew that I was going to make a fool of myself, so they ducked for cover and hid behind rocks. And I couldn't stand up because I'd sort of compressed my spine. So I was crawling along the beach looking for my friends. And this growing ring of laughter just sort of expanded out from where I was, of these people watching me crawl along the beach. And when the auditions came for Wheel of Fortune, I told that story. I filled out the little form, told that story, and they said, "Oh, we're getting you on the show." But yeah, I mean, it was great fun, and I wanted to go on the show because I was tired of people going on Wheel of Fortune and using silly words like, "Can I have a P for pencil?" Yeah. In New Zealand, we have an ongoing joke about a rugby player who went on the show and said, "Can I have an O for awesome?"
Yeah.
So I went on the show, and I would say to the host, "Oh, can I have an F for floxy, norsy, and helipilification?" Or an E for erythrocyte. I was trying to say all the words that he couldn't reproduce. I think he hated me at the end of it. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I just felt good when I arrived, and I came away with the car and a bunch of other prizes. So I was really proud of that.
Wow, that's great. Well, it's been a real pleasure getting to know you better. Now, I want to make sure people know your website, so it's easy to find. It's simply lucasyoung.com. Lucasyoung.com.
Yep.
And there's also a link to your YouTube channel there.
Yeah. And my website and my YouTube channel are a little bit out of date because I've charged on so much since then. But, I mean, you're welcome. People are welcome to follow me on Facebook, and you'll find all of those links on my About Me page. And I'm happy to talk to people if they have questions about anything that I've done, or if there's some area of expertise I seem to have that they want to know about. I mean, I'm happy to help.
Mm-hmm. And how long have you been a part of the group, the Putty Tribe?
That's a good question. It's at least a year, I think. I came on and instantly volunteered to Joel to help with the website. So we've been
I want to ask about that too. Yeah, it says you joined August 1st, 2017, so almost a year. And tell us a bit about the map project too with Joel.
Well, what we're doing is building a member map. It's basically like a Google map, and you can obviously, you have to opt in to be on it and opt in to choose what information is shown and so on. But basically you can say, I'd love to meet other putty peep for drinks, or I'd like to collaborate with them on a project, or I'd like to actually, you know, have someone to chat to. And so you can just tick those options. And then when people look in their area on the Google map, they can say, oh, look, there's, you know, five other tribe members in the same city as me, and three of them are keen for coffee. So you could organize a meetup. As you know, we're all around the world, and sometimes you can feel a bit isolated. That's an ongoing project at the moment that's ticking away.
Yeah, do you guys have a timeline or deadline or anything for that to get it going?
Well, we're all multi-potentialites, you see, that's the problem. So we all contribute our little bit. So it's in a beta phase at the moment. Like you can add yourself and you can, you know, tick your profile and see things pop up, but it just needs to be polished up a bit. So I'm hoping within the next month or so that it would go live.
That's great. That I think that will really add a nice component to the community experience, you know. Just trying it like we're the type of people, I think, that would love to be together in the same space, at least some of the time, and have that personal interaction. And of course, we largely can't because we're all over the world, but there could be some people who are close by and we can at least have a little taste of it, you know, unless, or maybe someday we organize some big multi-potentialite conference or retreat or something. That would be cool too. But at least in the meantime, to have the chance to really find out where people are, because otherwise, you know, you'd have to just kind of stumble across people, and it turns out, oh, they live fairly close by, or you could kind of search through people's profiles, I suppose, and see where they live. But, you know, nice to have a user-friendly kind of way to find others. So that's exciting. I hope it works out well.
Cool, thank you. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it's hard to search people in your location using like the member list and stuff, so the map will make it very visual and very easy.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, it's been a pleasure chatting with you today, getting to know you a bit better. A great inspiration, I think, to all of us who are working on these multiple projects, and you know, the mentality of approaching it. I think that's the best takeaway, is that we can be confident and we can be assertive, but we can also be kind and generous, and you know, be a self-assured in what we do, but not of course not alienate others in so doing, and that seems to be the fundamental, I guess, character trait that you present.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I just love people, and I think we all should care about each other a bit more and help each other out, and just not be scared to throw ourselves into stuff. So no, I've really enjoyed the chat. It's been nice to meet you, and
great,
looking forward to the future of the tribe.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Well, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Henriette Hammer is in our Putty Peep Spotlight this week. She is in two incredible spreadsheet things, unconventional music, and leading our Jumpstart July group. That's where a few people get together and work on various types of projects and a bit of kind of accountability, things like that, similar to the Puttython, but kind of spread out over the course of generally a month or so. And she has been spearheading that here in the middle of summer, when people often need a bit of a push to get some things done. So she's been great in taking the initiative on that. Henriette lives in Rotterdam, Netherlands, places she's lived in the past, also Eindhoven and Heerlen in the Netherlands. Link to personal website. She does have a site, and you can check it out. It's called sledgehammer-productions.nl. So sledgehammer-productions.nl. And that's where she works on some of her Excel spreadsheet projects. Now, this is interesting. I'm kind of pulling this here from her site. She says, "What happens when you mix an engineer with an artist? Look no further. You have found the place where unusual things are done with usual tools. What started with the question, how does a picture sound, has up till now resulted in an Excel sheet with which to create musical scores based on parameters of a picture, or on a mathematical formula, or on the letter frequency of a text. This is all done in Excel. The possibilities of Excel don't end with it making sound coming from your speakers. Add a microcontroller in the mix, and it can make LEDs light up in your room and or move stuff around, all based on the numbers in your balance sheet. Who knew that Excel could do all this kind of stuff?" So this is her project that she's working on, and I gather she's kind of taking an entrepreneurial spin to it and kind of pitching it to companies and businesses and so on, and asking if they'd be interested in getting more and something more creative out of their work with Excel. So if you go and visit her website there, you can see some of the projects that she has been working on. She talks about her mission, which is, we want the world to be a better place by putting a smile on people's faces when they experience something they didn't expect. That's a great line. Henriette is formerly trained as a high-voltage electrical engineer, so you can get a sense of her background. But she says just as much non-formal training as a musician, so linking the two together. So that's Henriette Hammer, who is our Putty Peep Profile of the Week. So that wraps up episode 15 of the Multipod. Thanks again to Lucas Young for joining us here on the episode. Great to hear that Kiwi accent again. Brings back lots of wonderful, fond memories of my time there. And it's been really neat diving into his biography and getting to know him better. Of course, you heard all the interesting things that he's done. But it inspires me to do more of this and get to know more of you, the members of the Putty tribe and our community. So if this piques your interest, in if you'd love to share some of your story and your adventures, your journey through life to whatever point you're at right now, and it's something that, you know, we can certainly use to inspire others and motivate others and, of course, get some really interesting stories. This is something we really like to do some more. We're thinking of perhaps throwing in some extra bonus episodes or extra little tidbits that we can give to you as we keep adding more and more content. Speaking of which, we have a couple episodes coming down the pipeline. We're looking at an episode on community builders and another episode on schools, basically. Schooling and people's experience in schools as multi-potentialites. So our team is busy working on that, and we hope to get that out to you within the next few weeks. As always, if you have ideas for topics that you'd like to hear us discuss, or of course you can come on and join us in the discussion yourselves as well, you can reach the show. It's themultipodcast@gmail.com, themultipodcast, all one word, @gmail.com. And of course, you can listen to our back episodes on our own page on theputtytribe.com/themultipod. That's where you can find all of our back episodes are listed there. If you missed last episode, episode number 14, I really encourage you to check that one out too. Sandrine did a great job getting a number of interviews together with different people and their perspectives on money and wealth, with a lot of really neat actionable advice and insights. So take the time to check that one out. And I want to give a special shout out to Michael Mulsey, who writes our show notes. He's a member of the Putty Tribe, of course, and has been part of our podcasting group here since day one. He's been an absolute rock, always reliable, writing spectacular show notes. He's really good at it, gives us the titles for each episode. And, you know, when we're always busy scrambling, trying to get our busy schedules and put an episode together, and we often get the audio file to him at, like, the last minute, and he turns around as quickly as he can within a few hours and sends us great show notes, which you can certainly check out for this episode as well. So he's an integral part to this whole production process, and a big thanks to Mike for all of his hard work. That wraps up episode 15. We'll be back here again in a couple weeks, and thanks very much for joining us here on the Multipod.